theory we have will allow us to understand the motion of interfaces with normal velocity, which would depend on this process B. And so we can have two terms, one is the usual stuff that depends on the normal direction and the Hessian of the gradient of the principal eigenvalues. And the second term that we'll see presumably the randomness. And the problem notice now, so this is the motion we want to understand. Then the corresponding level set PDE will be the one I write. Next, so here I'm going back and writing a more general form what I discussed in the first lecture yesterday about removing my curvature plus white noise. And then one can prove the usual result that if you take rho to be the sine distance function to the moving from the positive inside and negative outside, then in the sense of two inequalities, the distance function will satisfy this second order PDE. Where you notice now, I have dropped the Stratonovitz, and the reason is that when you're dealing with a distance function, it has gradient 1, and this the part that comes into the Stratonovitz, the extra term in the Stratonovitz integral has to do with, it was, do you remember from last time, if I had h du b, the extra term in the Stratonovitz was e squared. It's not trivial to show that, because once more, remember, we don't have a point-wise definition, and therefore you cannot use exactly the properties of the distance function at one single point. So this result is basically, the way I know how to prove it is for Brownian motion, and we have to use, we write this equation in an integrated form, the way I showed the general definition, and then we have to use particular, we have to make a particular choice of the partitions for the Brownian motion, for the Brownian integral, which more or less makes the integral to be like a Riemann sum. There is a way to approximate the stochastic integral in a very particular way, and then you can get this result. Okay, here is now another interesting application of the theory, application in the sense that you can use the theory to prove it. And this has to do with this non-generic issue of patterning when you're studying the motion of interfaces. And again, for the non-experts, that means that if you do the level set PDE, you like to represent your moving front as the zero level set of the solution, but you may be in a situation where the zero level set has a positive measure. Therefore, so it's like fadening. So and the canonical example for fadening for mean curvatures, so I'll explain that. That's the contrast of the result there. So if you want to move, let's say, two types of circles by mean curvature, what happens is this point is ambiguous for the mean function by mean curvature. It doesn't know which way to go. And so what happens is, immediately, one possibility is to think of this set as two circles touching together, in which case each one will start moving independently by mean curvature, or you can think of the circles as being the curve coming from outside touching here, in which case this will open up and look like that. So if you solve the mean curvature PDE, that guy with mean curvature U, the initial data the sine distance function to this set, what you're going to get immediately is a solution which is zero on this set and will be positive here and negative there. And of course, this is something unsatisfactory because not only the moving interface is not a surface, I mean, it's fact that you don't know which one to choose. Anyway, so One suggestion was to see whether if you add the Nagel motion, if you add the white noise to that problem, that motion, whether the strength of the white noise it will be such that it will destroy this interior, this ambiguity from the curvature, and make it go one way or the other. And the reason for thinking about that is if you look, instead of looking at the curvature motion, if you look, let's say, motion by du, so that's a motion with normal velocity c of t, and you start exactly the same initial condition, then you don't have this phenomenon. So if you start, you don't have this phenomenon because this point now is not ambiguous anymore for the you don't have interior in this case. And so the question is, if you combine these two terms together, whether you can prove that there's a natural selection principle which in principle kicks the maximal solution. And this is the result. So you start with study the motion of two tangent circles. Everything is in 2 here by mean curvature plus any multiple of the Brownian motion. Then you want to prove that as long as alpha is not zero, immediately this thing opens up and therefore it selects automatically the maximal solution. And the way to think about that is that somehow the Brownian motion is so strong it pulls it apart, and once it pulls apart, it keeps going like that. So there's no patterning. And then you can go a little bit behind that, and you think of the situation of having two circles that don't touch, and you let them move by this motion, and then with probability of half, either they will never get together, or if they get together, they will open up, and you're going to have this phenomenon. implications of the, that's a good definition of singularities, is then one goes to a series of asymptotic problems where people predict problems in phase transitions, and then we'll discuss that in the next transparency. There you have situations where asymptotic problems where you expect to get a thin interface moving at a certain velocity. You expect this to be true for global in time, and one can prove that actually they are characterized, this interface are characterized by the motion defined by that. Now, I'm not going to ask a question.
Can I make a comment about the patent comment?
Yeah.
And so, if you take a mean curvature motion with the figure eight, if you add an extra condition that you choose, that you have to choose an orientation for your initial set, so there's an inside and an outside, then numerically you won't get past. Both the examples for the figure eight came from flipping the orientation, getting two solutions. One was selected.
Mean curvature, no, but I don't think they come from that, because mean curvature, the solution, at least at the level set, at the level of the level set PDE, doesn't care for mean curvature whether you have plus or minus inside or outside.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is, for example, with this example of two circles, if you choose an orientation and you solve with that orientation,
solve what?
Solve the level set PDE.
Level set PDE doesn't see orientation.
I know, but I'm saying if you solve the equation,
but I think when you numerically when you do that, you are introducing the
in that case it pulls apart because numerically is only more inside.
Yeah, but in some sense when you do that, you're putting much you're putting weight is not the right word, but you are asking it to go one way or the other. Somehow numerically is that, because the PDE won't see that. For mid curvature, it doesn't matter whether you have plus or minus.
The way you choose your initialize
I'm saying if you, so the way they did it.
Numerically, you're introducing noise. One way or the other, you're introducing noise. It may not be a white noise. You introduce some kind of
noise. Or you can call it a choice of orientation.
I don't know. Okay. The same way we can do the other hand problem, whatever that means in this case. You can study this as into the problem. This is a situation where you expect to get a curvature. And if you have a curve here that looks like PDB equals 0 and also start with two patching circles, you can show that at the limit, what you're going to get is the opening. So clearly there is a selection principle going on with the, with the noise you put in. Alright, so we're listening here, and we're going to talk a little bit about general case to phase transitions, and then I will conclude with two examples. Okay, so that's a general blurb about how this interface has come up in phase transitions and how one can see velocities with which depend on white noise. So, the issue is that you have moving interface in this context appear here between two coexisting phases of material and arise when you study the dynamics of phase power that generate the limit. So you have a material that may have two phases, you look at this for a long time, it tends to stabilize, and somehow it stabilizes between these two phases, so there's an interface, and you are interested in understanding the dynamics of that interface. And there are basically three kinds of models here. One is macroscopic models, where you use considerations from continuum mechanics. And this is what one gets in the Allen-Kantar equations, which are typically reaction diffusion equations, or systems of equations, which are Gesbo-Landau type of equations. You see that these are reaction diffusion equations of systems, which some formal analysis indicates that you're going to have an interface and you can predict its motion. The second kind of problems is the second class of models are microscopic models. So these are typically spin models, so stochastic Isaac models with appropriate dynamics. And then you can go from microscopic to macroscopic by some kind of hydrodynamic space-time scaling. And again, this has been carried out, and we can start from microscopic models, Ising models with long-range interactions, and you can show that with the appropriate scaling, you're going to obtain interfaces with a particular velocity. And now, and when I say it's been carried out, the big question is whether one can carry out this program with short-range interactions. Okay, then there is an intermediate scaling, I will call it mesoscopic scaling, where at the limit you're going to get reaction diffusion equations with additive noise. And the reason is that in this intermediate mesoscopic scaling, the effect of randomness is not averaged out in the limit. In other words, the law of large numbers is not strong enough here to kill all the randomness in the problem. And I have here some references, Spohn, Vesuvi in his school, Kawasaki and all that. I'll come back to the Kawasaki and all that reference. So this is a general blurb about what's going on in phase transitions and how interfaces come out. Now let me describe here in some detail an example I learned reading the paper tonight, which I think it's a pretty nice example that you can see from that the effects of the noise when you try to understand asymptotic limits of reaction fusion equations with additive noise. I'm not going to. I know it's dense, and at the first passage, I would suggest you just forget that this coefficient A there depends on X. And that's a simpler way to think of this problem. So think of a reaction fusion equation, which is what I wrote down here, unscaled now, completely, and the only thing you do is you add here, and the gamma is important in what follows, so keep, for some reason you start with the scaling. Forgetting the coefficient. So this is a case where you add a small noise, and if you look at this problem, you let epsilon go to zero, you just get the usual reaction diffusion equation. So I think F to be cubic, so it's the derivative of the double over potential. I'm assuming that the potential have wells at the same depth. And some notation is the traveling wave, the standing wave that corresponds to that potential is Q. It solves that for E here. And then one extra notation that we'll need later on, P of X and Y and T is the fundamental solution of the linearized heat operator around the traveling wave Q. So this is notation. And the goal here is to understand the long time behavior and the effect of noise. So this is what I meant at the beginning, that you find interfaces when you do some asymptotic scaling. Okay, now bear with me with the scalings. If you do them probabilistically, as Funaki does, and I say probabilistic, if you do it in law, as Funaki does, basically the only thing he uses is the scaling property of the Brownian motion up there, and therefore this is of course true only in law, and therefore for Funaki all the scalings can take place with the same PDE, because all of them are equivalent in law. We cannot do anything in law, it's pathwise, so at every step I'm going to be changing my PDE. But keep in mind this is what I'm doing. So I like to understand the long-time behavior long space-time behavior of solution. And I start with the first scaling, which is the parabolic scaling, which was a scaling that if you were to use it here without the white noise, would give you motion by curvature. So I introduce this parabolic scaling up there, and using the properties of the Brownian motion, you find that the new function V solves this equation. Notice if I didn't have that, this is like having the old Lagrange. And notice what I have here is some small constant, epsilon to some power, multiplying the white noise. And then, of course, this is the standard theorem that if you're in the Brownian motion or Brownian motion, by the way, I write B dots instead of DB, its notation gets easier this way. So this is the old result that we had prepared in matter many years ago, that because smooth or not, I mean, Brownian motion or not Brownian motion, this is a small epsilon in front of me, that the limit, when you get an interface that moves with by mean curvature. And you actually get WKB approximation, if you like, or representation for the solution as the traveling wave scaled in the normal direction, like the distance to the interface. And in particular, you see no effects for the noise in this case. Now, the interest here is to see the effects of the noise. And so the program we go here is like that. You need to scale more. You need to go further out to see the effects of the noise. And I didn't state this as I should have put it here, but I think we should get worse. If I had started with just a hyperbolic scaling, epsilon and a half, then I would see nothing. I would get nothing. So the first scaling you try here is epsilon and a half. And you get nothing because the speed of the, this is a standing wave. The equation doesn't support traveling wave. So there you get nothing, and you go to this scaling. So you obtain this, which you may say it's fine, but then it's also uninteresting because you've lost all the effects of the noise. So you have to scale even further to understand the effects of the noise. And this is the next scale. Now, from now on, I write this thing as a small d, but it's really 1D. Whatever I'm saying is really 1D, although I'm writing with Laplacians and so on. So you scale once more, where you put this additional scaling here. Now, the only way I can explain the scaling is that if I do that, I get this PD. Once more, if I were to do it in law, I would change Z, but here I have to put the Z because I'm changing the equation. So now I get this equation. And see what happens now. The main contribution of the noise is like epsilon to a quarter, because that's the factor here. The width of the interface is always epsilon square root, because the width of the interface basically is determined by this one over epsilon there, square root of that. It's the same square root up there. So we are still in a situation where the interface, the Brownian motion is still somehow negligible for the interface. So if you like, the random properties of the Brownian motion are not so important. One way to think of this problem is that you use the first scaling to drive the solution on the manifold of things that look like traveling standing waves, and then you are on that manifold and you try to understand even more what happens. So that's the meaning of this result. And then what you get in this case is that indeed you have, again, something moving. The Z looks like the same cube, same scaling, because that's the width of the interface. And now psi t is a deterministic. It's a deterministic interface which moves by the all A there, which is squared, times alpha 3. Okay, alpha 3. Alpha 3 you get it by some ergodic limit that involves quantities that you wouldn't see before, in particular the second derivative of f and the fundamental solution of the linearized strip kernel around that point. Nevertheless, so you see something new. This would have not been there if there was no Brownian motion. If A were zero, which was another way to say there's no Brownian motion, then you wouldn't have this theorem. But still, you get something deterministic. All right. Now, you have to go to the next step, which says, what if this quantity A3 here is zero? This factor A3 here is zero. And one way to see that A3 is zero is to think that not only you have an F which is the derivative, everything I said so far will work for an F, that is the problem, my patient doesn't do it, but will work for an F where this area is the same as this area. But now what if not only you have that property, but F is odd? If F is odd, then you look at this thing a little bit and you realize this term will be zero. Then you go to the next term in the expansion. And the next term of the expansion means now you go more and you do an extra scaling where I scale the Z, where I show you what it means on V and I show you what it means on U. And now you are in this situation. And now you are in a situation where there is a real competition between the white noise and the interface. Because the width of the interface, again, is square root of epsilon. This keeps remains unchanged. But now you have Brownian motion with the effect of Brownian motion is the same, the epsilon square root, as it is the width of the interface. You go once more, you make this expansion, but now you find a psi that is random. Because the Brownian motion is there, that won't go away. And there are three terms, and I purposely split it in two parts here, to show you that there is actually one of these terms is because I'm writing it in ethos instead of Stratonovich. However, so there's some alpha 1, and I write down what is half alpha 1 plus alpha 2. The important thing is that there is a non-trivial term here, alpha 2, which is a new term that comes up in the problem. And it's there because now what happens is the randomness not only gives you an interface that moves like Brownian motion, but introduces an additional mean velocity, which is the effect of the randomness. So in the average, introduce an additional velocity, which you can calculate once more this way. The way these things come up is the usual Fredrich alternative kind of argument, although it's a little bit tricky because you need to make asymptotic expansions using asymptotic expansions with stochastic PDEs, and then how you equate the terms that involve 1 over epsilon is a little bit trickier than the usual thing. Okay, so as I said, this is a result of Fonakian law, and we can use the theory we have here to reproduce it in a pathwise sense. I would like to figure out if there's any hope to do something more 3D here, whatever that means, but it's, I'm not sure. Okay, but I said that to some people, Funaki was the person that got me into this. I was visiting Hitoshi in Japan many years ago, and Funaki had this paper on the Allen-Kahn, which is this one, in 2D. And he was studying the asymptotic meaning of the Allen-Kahn equation in 2D, and of course he was getting a curve that was moving by mean curvature plus white noise, and there it was easy to do. Since it was a curve, it was just a stochastic D, and then he had a similar result in the case that the interface was smooth. And so he asked me whether one can do that using viscosity solutions globally in time, and that was at least the thing that brought me into that. Alright, so now I want to describe that. The stochastic Allen-Kahn. It's a different scaling than this one before, because now I impose from the beginning, if you like, I'm imposing from the beginning the right strength on the white noise, so interface will be have, again, the interface will have width square root of epsilon, the white noise is power strength, width epsilon, square root of epsilon, so these things will compete. And you can think of B epsilon as being some nice approximation to the Brownian motion, or you can think of B epsilon as B, like B as being just a Brownian motion, and think of that as a stochastic B. F cubic, and then one can prove that as epsilon goes to zero, you create an interface which moves by mean curvature plus an additional term, and this is just, forget about that, it's just autonomous formulation. So there is an additional velocity with, they are involving, so you obtain this motion.
These problems are not in any
order of difficulty or significance, it's just a list. The second problem has to do with boundary conditions and understanding the Chromian boundary domains. As hard as the theory may be, or easy, everything is static. We have said nothing about boundary conditions, and in analogy now with stochastic ease, you may think of what it means to have boundary conditions here. Now you have exit times for the PDE and so on. So nothing is known about that. Nobody has even formulated. And I believe there will be difficulties in a number of situations because one will have to play this game with local time smooth solutions and then a bounded domain that becomes a more complicated situation. Another question, which is puzzling, is the issue of the regularity of the solutions. And in particular, suppose we take the simplest problem for definiteness. So you have 1D, HUX, think of H anything you want, motion plus, and some positive lambda UXX. Do you have regularizing effect? Is the solution to this problem here regular? Again, the difficulty is about the fact that any time you have a time dependent, so in fact, if this was not DD, this was a nice path, but of course that's a trivial issue. You start differentiating the equation as many times as you like, you do all the estimates you want, the estimates will depend on the L1 norm of the path of DB, and then you're done. But of course you cannot do that. That's another example where you cannot even build barriers, because everything is local there, and here you have to find a global way to do it. We find this to be a nice, simple stated problem that we don't know, I mean, we have some partial results, but then it's... anything about formulas? For this problem. I mean, what I mean by formulas here is so let's think again of the Hamilton-Jacobi case. Let me write it like that. Take H Lipschitz, and then we know that if H is Lipschitz, it's the min-max of things. And the only difference, so when it's min-max, then one can write down the differential gain representation for the solution. The difficulty here is you are multiplying by something that, okay, it's plus minus infinity, but forget about the plus minus infinity. Think of something that changes sign continuously from plus to minus. So for at any given time, let's say, where the b plus, it's either plus infinity or minus infinity, and forget the plus of the infinity part. At any time where b prime is either positive or negative, you have a representation. One is min-max, the other is max-min. That suggests that there may be a formula. But the formula, it's not clear what it is, because if you write down the obvious formula, the integrals don't converge. What happens there is, at the minimizer, the integrals converge, but then the minimizers are some random processes and you have no information about what to do with them. So formulas, I think that will be an interesting situation, because after all, that will give us one more example of something we know how to write down, because remember, there's only one example, only one equation that we know how to write down the solution. Related to that is numerics. I was asked the other day that whether there are numerics for this problem, and the only numerical results I know is that by Katsulakis and Koo, I still know this, in the case of the stochastic of the Allen-Kahn and at the limit. So an interesting issue here is to come up with nice numerics for this problem to understand what happens after all. Then, I put here as only one sentence, but that it's important because, and I kept stressing that the other lectures, this is a pathwise theory. It's a nice, false pathwise theory, but it gives you nothing about the random properties of the solution, the stochastic properties of the solution. So anything that one can say about the probabilistic, the stochastic properties of the solution will be important. And we have no clue about that. I mean, in principle, one could say that there is a theory in law for these problems, but that would mean to think of an infinite dimensional space, define generators there and so on, and we had no idea how to do that. So we have a pathwise theory, no information about the stochastic properties of the solution. The way I wrote it here is information about the asymptotic behavior as t goes to infinity, which is like some kind of homogenization in both situation, and the existence or non-existence of invariant measures for these kinds of solutions. As a curiosity, a problem we worked out is this situation where instead of having gradient dependence instead of the Brownian motion, we have a U dependence. Now, we wanted to see what happens in this situation. The assumptions of G are such that, there is no blowout here. All right, so let me take that out of the situation. We are not interested in this very nice results about blowout of solutions of stochastic Ds if you put in front of the white noise a power of U. And the reason you're going to have the blowout there is because you keep changing the sign, so you build up and you're going to have the blowout. This is not the situation. This is a situation where the G is such that you're not going to have a blowout, whatever that means. And so we have a complete theory for that. And the key idea here is to change, if you like, is by making this change a variable for psi is related to an ODE, is a solution an ODE related to G. Then if you make this change a variable, V satisfies the PDE with random coefficients but without white noise. And for that, it has some special properties, and one can understand. An interesting thing that we don't know how to do is how to do both gradient and U dependence in front of the white noise. And that may be because either we are not smart enough or we didn't try enough, but let me tell you why we cannot do that. The whole theory is based on the idea that if you match derivatives and then you solve the small semigroup, you stay nearby. And we don't know how to match both the value of U and the value of the derivative. Because remember, this is not local. In the local case, as we do for viscosity solutions, say, okay, we add a constant, and when you add that constant, you can assume that U is equal to phi at that point. You change phi by constant. And then you can deal with this if you don't have Brownian motion. But if you have something that is infinity there, you cannot eliminate this extra constant. So I know it sounds a little bit strange, but we don't see how to put this thing together. Then one thing we have computed that it works, and I don't know whether it has any particular significance, is of course you can try to think of conservation laws with white noise in them. Now this is not Burger's equation with it on the right hand side. This is a situation where the white noise hits the nonlinearity, and we have some partial results that involve the genetic formulation for this program and regularizing effects. Mike asked me to state some references, and basically everything that can be found is in a series of four Conrad D notes. I will give you the reference for only the most recent one, and from there you can apply dynamic programming and find the rest of them. And I guess I don't have it. here it is. So this is the one that has all the uniqueness in the result. So this is gas 331 783 790 2000. Con Review Academy Science by you. That's my friends, and I love this. It's the proceedings of the French Elizabeth.